soon, and people like, they kind of wondered about that. Why did we, then he wanted to integrate the services, and then to hear stories about servicemen who fought in World War II, the way that they were treated fighting Nazis.
Yep.
You know, but when you speak to power, power is not going to concede. You have to kick the door in. Miss Wright, you understand what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean, brother.
Women are talking about, we got to break the ceiling. You got to kick the door in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a revolution. It stops a little bit, but then it moves again. But then it stops again. Because you're going to, I'll just say this. A famous black person said this one time, without struggle, there is no progress.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that was Frederick Douglass. Unfortunately, that's how life is. Now, not all whites are that way, but you got to understand, when you're fighting against the powers that be, it's like there were white people who lost their lives trying to support the Freedom Riders. It's like you got to learn, you know, you want to make yourself a target. Unfortunately, that's how it is. And let me say this before we go about Martin Luther King. I love the NAACP. I love them. But you know what? They gave tacit support to him, too.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Clayton Powell, New York City, gave tacit support to Martin Luther King. So we need to bring all of that stuff out. We need to bring all of that stuff out. Everybody wasn't homogenous and whatever, like.
Of course not.
Hate things to be. It wasn't that way.
Of course not. You had people who were not only white people, okay, who were not supportive of what Martin Luther King was doing, but you had some blacks, and that is going that's to be expected. Like, why are you making white people mad? You know, why are you stirring up trouble?
Yeah, why are you stirring up trouble? And we can't use that word on the air, but you know, why are you coming down here stirring up all these trouble with our niggers?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
See, and you try to tell young people, I think this was only 50 years ago. So you get hungry and you want to go into your favorite fast food restaurant. You think you can just walk right in the front door, go right to the counter, and expect to have service when they used to tell you, we don't serve N-words here.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go out to the side window and stuff. And people, they look up in the air and they roll their eye. Oh, but that's it. But America's changed. No, it hasn't.
Nope.
Because of laws, they are made to suppress how they really feel. But Trump has now made it feel like you can really come out and express how you feel, like these kids from this Catholic school who did this stuff over there. Okay, I'm going to get off the air. I know you got more people calling.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much, Daryl. This is WMNF 88.5, WMNF Tampa, with Kai Wright in the 4th Estate. Give us a call at 813-239-9663, 813-239-9663. Daryl makes a lot of great points. And it is absolutely insulting to hear folks, again, tell us about how we should deal with the racism that we have been facing. And, of course, it's not that long ago. Our grandparents and great-grandparents and parents also remember these times. There are people alive who are participating, of course, in the demonstrations, in the sit-ins, and who were doing the assaulting, the beating of these people, walking around with no punishment. I talk about that quite a bit because I find it very disconcerting and disappointing that there isn't any memorializing of the wrongs committed by people who are walking around today, walking around alive today. So, yes, Daryl, I agree with you totally. And you know, people do need to understand, not that long ago at all. And we're still dealing with the same kinds of things today. I mean, think about how, you know, people in restaurants say they're uncomfortable. There's stories about that happening and them, you know, kicking black people out. You know, there are many ways, you know, racism, as Michelle Williams said in her great book, The New Jim Crow, you know, racism, you know, adapts very, very easily. And a lot of people, other people have said it as well. But, you know, she's right. It adapts very, very, very easily, very, very quickly. So we just went over a couple of statements made by high-level folks, right? FBI, individuals, directors, right? Robert Kennedy, okay, as well as what JFK was doing. And then the regular American citizenry and MLK's fellow clergymen when it comes to what they thought about him and the movement, okay? So another thing I wanted to touch on here is, and we'll get to you callers, we're coming right up, and then we're going to go to a break here, but is how we got to Martin Luther King's holiday, right? I'm going to talk about this. And then we're gonna hit a break. But remember that Martin Luther King Jr.'s federal holiday came into being 1986. Okay? 1986. Right? So that meant that would apply to all federal employees. And 44 states, I believe, it kind of immediately came on board or were already on board. But it wasn't until 2000 that every state recognized Martin Luther King's birthday. 2000. It took 14 years. The same Martin Luther King. This is not 100 years ago. This is not even 50 years ago. You know, when people see things in black and white and they're like, oh, it's so long ago. This is up till 2000. States were not recognizing Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. Can you believe that, Alvaro?
Crazy.
I mean, what were they thinking? And some of the holdouts, you know, because again, people like to malign the states in the South, all right? States in the North and again, other areas of the country like to malign white people in the South. No, it was all of you. Arizona, and that was a big mess. And one of the reasons they ended up changing and accepting was because there were threats to not allow the Super Bowl to be held there. That's what moved them.
Yeah.
That's what moved them.
Yeah.
The money.
Yeah. But it's not surprising. Arizona's pretty crazy.
You know, but you know, again, people always talk about the South or whatever, but no, Arizona, New Hampshire.
Okay.
New Hampshire was late to the game.
Yeah.
And South Carolina, you know, was also late to the game. So, you know, you think, what in the world were these states thinking? And there were various arguments. Oh, you know, we shouldn't have a day for just a one civil rights leader out of many. And, you know, we have days for individuals when it's a president or somebody. Okay, well, look at Columbus. Okay? If you want to talk about significant human beings. And then you pick the most really mild person ever. I mean, there's no Malcolm X Day. You know? And we'll talk about how, even though how Martin was mild, how he did in fact start to change quite a bit, actually, towards the end. Now that's the Martin that I like. Okay, that is the Martin that you know. I'm like, okay, I could get with him. I could get with him and have a great conversation with the late Malcolm. So. The other bit here on WMNF 88.5 with Kaya Wright in the Fourth Estate, for anyone who just tuned in, and we're talking about Martin Luther King unwhitewashed, is the fact, and Lo, you were surprised when I said this, and tell me if you knew this, Alvaro, that there are states that combine Martin Luther King's birthday with Robert E. Lee.
No, never heard of it.
I know.
Robert E. Lee, yeah. The leader of the Confederate Army, the same Confederacy that was fighting to do what? Keep slavery. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear your states' rights nonsense, because it was states' rights to do what? Keep slaves. Okay? Robert E. Lee Day. How insulting is that? Robert E. Lee was born on January 19th. Martin Luther King was born on January 15th. Okay? So, but we already know we're dealing with the people who are petty, spiteful, and vindictive. Case in point, the Confederate statues, right? Many of them were, but not all of them, but many of them were put up in response to civil rights efforts, right? As a kind of in your face, right? Okay, you might be having some advances, you know, right now. You know, some things kind of falling your way, at least in theory. So let's put up these Confederate monuments. Let's raise these Confederate flags everywhere on state houses and or whatever. Okay? And so here you have three states, and actually one has changed, and I'm going to play a clip here in a minute about that. But Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, okay, Arkansas recently just separated the two. I want to say in the last 2 years, so not even that long ago, just separated the days. And Alvaro Lowe, WMNF family, in Lexington, Virginia, they have a Stonewall Jackson. They take it even further. A Stonewall Jackson, Robert E. Lee parade the weekend leading up to MLK Day. So this weekend, Confederate flag. I mean, you can imagine a big Confederate parade. Such a slap in the face.
Leading up to Martin Luther King.
Right.
Leading up to Black History Month.
Right.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but this is the level of petty.
Let me set the tone before you celebrate.
Yes.
Your black heritage.
And there are many instances of that sort of thing. That sort of vindictive, horrific behavior of such disrespect to our people.
We have these people right in our government locally.
Yeah.
Where you saw their voting when it came to the movement of the Confederate monument,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
Right here, our county commission. You know?
And that school for Robert E. Lee has been changed. The name has been changed. And since Alvaro brought up local, I think this is a good time to bring in our local history of Tampa in regards to MLK and also when we began the name change. And actually, it's a part of one of the Tampa streets, or a couple of Tampa streets, North Boulevard and MacDill. I believe... in the 1960s, right after the assassination of Martin Luther King, there was a name change then to Martin Luther King Boulevard. And then it did not start again or started back up in the 1980s, 1989 to be more specific, in which we have... the state road, but it was also known as Buffalo Avenue. And you got to have a lot of people around Tampa that know about Buffalo Avenue. And pre-show, I was telling Kaya, I'm an adult at this time when this happened, so we're talking about the year 2000 sometime. So remember now, this name change took place in 1989. And so I was ear hustling, is what I call it, eavesdropping, but I was ear hustling this conversation where this older white male was speaking to someone. And he was like, yeah, you go right over there and go down the street, down on Buffalo. Yeah, go right there, down on Buffalo. Tell them Todd sent you. And so after that guy left, I'm like, where's Buffalo? I know he pointed down the street, but I said, isn't that MLK? And the person looked at me, yeah, he means MLK. And now the thing is, it's just, why is there such a strong resistance when we do things like this in a sense to celebrate our empower, you know, for betterment, that there is still a strong resistance to change?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's like just a subtle act of rebellion.
Yeah.
Right? You know, kind of let you know, I'm not on board with this. And I think it's also a psychological tactic. I think it's also a psychological tactic, even with the laws that were enforced, was passed, the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. Let's say there's something that I don't really want. Let's say I have a wallet or whatever that I don't really want, but I know you really want it. So I'm going to pretend like I really want to keep it or whatever, you know, and you're fighting for it, and I'm going to keep it. And then I finally give it over to you, and you are so happy. And let's make sure we get the names of the folks that we have on there who are coming. But you are so happy to finally get it. You know, you are so ecstatic that you don't even concentrate on the fact that I don't really enforce it, right? And that it's really a symbolic victory, and it keeps you distracted from other things that may be more substantive. And, you know, I really think that's what we've done there. I think that's what we've done there. So we're going to play this clip, and we got a bunch of callers on the line, and we are going to get right to you. But I wanted to play this clip first about one of the other states that has a combined MLK Robert E. Lee Day and what it is that they're trying to do.
Lawmakers pushing to separate holidays honoring Robert E. Lee and Martin Luther King Jr. Right now, Alabama honors both men on the third Monday in January. At WVTM 13's John Papke joins us live in Birmingham. How many other states celebrate the dual holiday, John?
Well, Guy, until this week, three, but Arkansas's governor on Tuesday signed a law that would shift Lee's holiday to October. So now just Alabama and Mississippi celebrate the dual holiday to honor the Confederate general and the civil rights leader. But one Birmingham lawmaker wants to change that. For three decades, Alabama has honored Robert E. Lee and Martin Luther King Jr. together. Representative John Rogers believes it is time for a change.
It's like putting oil with water. I think it's an insult to the black community to put Martin's birthday with Robert E. Lee. I imagine it's up to the people who love the Confederacy, putting him with Martin.
Rogers has introduced legislation to merge Lee's birthday with Confederate Memorial Day in April. We called a commander with Alabama Sons of Confederate Veterans about the proposal.
Robert E. Lee was absolutely opposed to slavery. He was opposed to black inequality. He called slavery a moral and political evil.
In fact, Carl Jones believes the famous Confederate general is misunderstood.
If Robert E. Lee and Martin Luther King were alive today, I don't believe that either one of them would have any problem with celebrating their births on the same day.
But after Arkansas separated the two holidays this week, Rogers believes his bill has a chance.
That gives me hope that there are some logical thinking people somewhere else besides Alabama. And so Alabama always behind somebody else, but it gives me a little hope that we can get it done.
Rogers will try to bring the holiday shuffling legislation up for a vote next week.
All right, so obviously some nonsense from whoever was that Confederate group individual about Robert E. Lee, you know, and I read a bit about that after I heard that, and, you know, found that obviously he owned slaves, he was very much in favor of slavery, but after the war tried to change his tune. Try to change his past legacy, but no. But hey, let's get to these callers, because, and then I want to get to a break, but I got to get to my callers first. So first we have Anonymous, okay, in Gibsonton. All right.
Just know we have the red button, so make sure you're adhering.
Yes. The red button means we can, you know, dump things and then cut off. But hey, go ahead, Anonymous. You are on WMNF 88.5 with Kyle Wright and Fourth Estate on the Sunday Forum.
Good morning. There's so much to say.
Okay, keep it quick. Keep it quick. We got a bunch of callers we want to get to.
Okay, thank you. First of all, did you know that there's a rebel reenactment of the Civil War that's going on this weekend also in Zephyr Hills of Dade City? You have to go back. When you start talking about this area, you have to think about Bill Connor, who was the chief of police in Birmingham, Alabama, that told the Klan that he was going to let the Klan have their way with the Freedom Riders for an hour.
Wow.
Before he sent the FBI in. And even the original Democrats, got Strong Thurmond from North Carolina, who fathered an African-American lady through one of his teachers. I mean, through one of his huntsmen.
Right.
You had Lester Marks in Jordan, who painted that he wanted blood labeled as black and white blood. You had George Wallace in Alabama. So you had all these original Dixiecrats that was pushing everything to stay and remain as it is. And even at this day and time, we had Trent Lott specific for what he did.
Yep.
You had all these agencies in Florida. Now you got a big rebel flag that's flying out there, and the biggest school in Florida, I-4,
yep.
And I-75.
Speak to it.
And I myself, in my fifth floor, have moved here, and when I asked where was MLK Boulevard, they asked me, Buffalo Highway, and I said, no, I'm MLK. No, he said, no, Buffalo Highway. But I would love to come on the show, because a lot of things that have gone along this particular weekend, that's just totally dismarking what Dr. King has done.
Wow.
And there is, seems to be, you can't say, you hear about a broken situation, his mother killed because of a white woman said that she was raped.
Mm-hmm.
You had the Mount Gera massacre.
Hmm.
You had the Santee River massacre in South Carolina that you didn't hear anything about. So, you know, this situation is, it's still racist. You know, you're supposed to rebel against the United States, but yet you're still allowed to fly what you stood for.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Racism is alive and well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
thank you.
Thank you very much.
And on your way out, let me say this to you, sir. I said the only Buffalo that I'm willing to acknowledge here in Tampa is Buffalo Curtis that is off of East Martin Luther King that used to sell some of the best Cuban sandwiches. Okay, that's the only Buffalo I'm acknowledge. MLK is MLK, not Buffalo Boulevard.
Okay, and did you know in history that you had the cigar rollers? You had two African-American cigar rolling houses in the city of Tampa that you don't hear anything about when you do an African-American tour, or for that matter, any type of tour.
Okay.
All of the photos and everything that happened that talks about Central Avenue is tucked away in a little box in a museum right there by the Amelina, whatever
Arena.
Forum you call that place. Mm-hmm. You have to ask for it.
Well, hey, you know, hey, Anonymous, hey, I wanted to say, you know, you said about coming on the show and telling us about a lot of things. Sounds like you have a lot of information, so why don't you stay on the line back there and we'll get your name and see if we can have you come in and talk some history, okay?
Exactly.
All right,
all right, so stay on the line for just a moment. We're going to place you on a hold, okay, sir?
Sure.
Okay.
All right, let's get to Elizabeth. She's been patiently waiting from Riverview. I don't know what's wrong with me today.
Good morning, lady.
All right, how are you doing today? Welcome to the Sunday Forum. How are you doing? You doing good?
Very good.
Good, good.
Appreciate the weather. It's been decent.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, indeed. Thank you for being so patient.
Oh, yes, ma'am. I appreciate the fact that you took my call, ladies. That's most kind of you. What I really want to say is thank you to Daryl. I enjoy that man so. He is one of the most knowledgeable people I have ever heard on any subject. He's a smart man. Other than that, I consider him an absolute friend. I have never met the gentleman. But he and I share ideas, and I appreciate hearing him speak because he speaks so well. Anything I might say would probably come across not half as well as what that gentleman speaks. And I thank you for taking my call again, ladies. Have a good day.
Elizabeth.
Yes, ma'am.
Sir.
It's Alvaro.
Yeah, it's Alvaro. I'm always... very enthused and learn a lot from your comments on the radio. But one time I heard you say, I think you came in the studio, if I'm not mistaken.
One time, yes, I did.
Yes, and you said something about the chain gangs. What was that? And what do you think about that?
What was the word? I didn't.
He said the chain gangs very quickly. You wanted to eat something about the chain gangs when you came in.
Did I speak about chain gangs?
I don't think she did. Alvaro, I don't recall her saying that.
Yeah, well,
speaking of chain gangs,
okay.
I think those are horrible.
Okay. Well, there you go, Alvaro. Yeah. There's your response.
All right. Good. Good. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. Thank you very much. Hey, all right. So we are the Sunday Forum. You're listening to Kai Wright in the Fourth Estate here on 88.5 WMNF Tampa. We've blown through another break, but we got so many clips to get to, and we still got some callers on the line. So here we go, but I got to get to some clips. So Zebulon, you can hold on. I'm going to get to you. I'm going to play this one clip. Okay, now this is MLK, and I'm going to start off with what we usually hear, which was his, you know, this is the dream that he had, right? What we all know. But here is something he said about the dream that you may not have heard before.
I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
I must confess that that dream that I had that day has at many points turned into a nightmare. Now, I'm not one to lose hope. I keep on hoping. I still have faith in the future. But I've had to analyze many things over the last few years, and I would say over the last few months. I've gone through a lot of soul searching and agonizing moments, and I've come to see that we have many more difficult days ahead, and some of the old optimism was a little superficial, and now it must be tempered with a solid realism. I think the biggest problem now is that we got our gains over the last 12 years at bargain rate, so to speak. It didn't cost the nation anything. In fact, it helped the economic side of the nation to integrate lunch counters and public accommodations. It didn't cost the nation anything to get the right to vote established. And now we are confronting issues that cannot be solved without costing the nation billions of dollars. Now, I think this is where we're getting our greatest resistance. They may put it on many other things, but we can't get rid of slums and poverty without it costing the nation something.
All right, so he said his dream had turned into a nightmare. Now, this is towards, this is about 11 months before he was killed, okay? That is Martin Luther King during his NBC interview with Sander Vanacker. I hope I'm pronouncing that last name right. But anyway, so, you know, again, something that we may not have heard before, but he's like, hey, this was a nightmare. So let's get to Zebulon, who has been waiting patiently. Zebulon, you are on the Sunday Forum with Kaya Wright in the Fourth Estate. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm fine, Kaya. I couldn't have asked for a better segue into my subject matter than that.
Awesome.
The MLK holiday is one that I love because it celebrates a man who truly stood for equal rights and justice and peace on earth. As someone who is in the majority in this country, I work a service economy job that has no paid day off, no paid holidays. I get paid by the hour. It's based on performance. The more I sell, the more I get hourly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every year when the MLK holiday comes along, it is a big financial burden for me because it comes right on the tail of the holiday, which I don't get paid for, but I have to take, I took 2 days off Christmas, 2 days off New Year's. So it only gave me 3 days to work to get my hours in. And that's based on how much I sell. And of course, with less hours at work, you don't sell as much. So those were some pretty skimpy holiday checks. And then the MLK holiday always comes about 2 weeks later. And I don't get paid for that either. It cuts into my work day. The school's closed. The daycare's closed. What I'm saying is this. I'm not complaining by any means. I love having the day off with my children. Don't get me wrong. What I'm saying is that to actually fulfill the vision of Dr. King means that we have to push hard for workers' rights. That's what he died doing. He was pushing for workers' rights for the sanitation workers in Memphis. And we have to push harder and harder and harder for workers' rights. Every worker in this country should get paid time off. Every worker in this country should get paid national holidays off. And every worker in this country should be guaranteed a workable living wage. Those are the things that King died fighting for. He never got to have the Poor People's March.
Right.
He got to have a march on Washington, but he was killed before the Poor People's March could be, you know, brought to realization. So that's all I'm saying is that we're still on that Poor People's March all these years later. And the money that I give up every day that I don't get, every day there's a holiday or anything like that, it hurts me financially. But when it comes to Martin Luther King, I take it with pride because I say, you know what? Martin Luther King would have been right here next to me saying, well, brother, I'm sorry that my holiday cost you $50 or it cost you $100, but you know what? If we all make some sacrifices and we all work together, we can get workers' rights in this country.
And listen, and it's not his holiday that's doing that, right? So it's the policies surrounding that, you know, that happened, right?
Yeah. Hold that against King.
Exactly.
That's King.
Exactly.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's the system. It's the same system that King was fighting against that will take something as sacred as a holiday for Martin Luther King and make it into something that hurts poor people. That's all I'm saying.
Indeed. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate you calling, and have a great rest of your day. All right. So one more clip I want to play before we hit a break. Got to hit at least one more break. So this is another clip of Martin that we often do not hear. And he's talking again about whites. So let's listen to what Martin had to say.
To them by the Constitution, by the fact that they were citizens of this country. Then when they were given those rights, do you feel the white community said, well, we've given them all that we have, now it's up to them?
Well, I think the dilemma is much deeper, and I think one during this period of transition has to be very honest with America. And honesty impels me to admit that America has broad racist elements still alive. Racism is still existing in American society, in many areas of the society, North and South. And the other thing is that there has never been a single, solid, determined commitment of large segments of white America on the whole question of racial equality. I think we have to see that vacillation has always existed, ambivalence has always existed, and this to me is the so-called white backlash. It's merely a new name for an old phenomenon. I see the white backlash as a continuation of the same ambivalence and vacillation of white America on the whole question of racial justice that has existed since the founding of our nation. I think the other thing that we must see at this time is that many of the people who supported us in Selma, in Birmingham, were really outraged about the extremist behavior toward Negroes. But they were not at that moment, and they are not now, committed to genuine equality for Negroes. It's much easier to integrate a lunch counter than it is to guarantee an annual income, for instance, to get rid of poverty for Negroes and all poor people. It's much easier to integrate a bus than it is to make genuine integration a reality and quality education a reality in our schools. It's much easier to integrate even a public park than it is to get rid of slums. And I think we are in a new era, a new phase of the struggle, where we have moved from a struggle for decency, which characterized our struggle for 10 or 12 years, to a struggle for genuine equality. And this is where we are getting the resistance, because there was never any intention to go this far. People were reacting to Bull Connor and to Jim Clark rather than acting in good faith for the realization of genuine equality.
All right, so excellent, excellent points that he makes there, right? And we talked about this just a couple weeks ago, and I'm going to get to you, Sean, in Lakeland. I'm going to get to you. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago when there was a discussion about allies and, you know, we're going to make them angry. And my point was either they are for the eradication of systemic racism, white supremacy, or they're not. And it shouldn't be dependent on what it is that we're saying about them or et cetera. That kind of conditional allyship is completely unwanted. Okay, and we are talking today about Martin Luther King Jr. unwhitewashed. And he says there specifically, right, that the gains that were made or the support that he got from whites was when they didn't believe it cost them hardly anything. Okay, when it looked like he was advocating for things like what Zebulon was actually talking about, and that would have been the best segue. More income equality than things, you know, then went left. Things went left. But when it was the integration, et cetera, okay, you know, yes, there was some resistance, obviously, we know, but at the end of the day, it cost him nothing. At the end of the day, it cost him nothing. And what should have been done from the very beginning. So it was very interesting to hear him make those comments. And again, this is shortly before he's done. So now this is, you know, some 5 years, almost 5 years after the March on Washington. And he's sobered. He's sobered and notices. And he also said that the vast majority of whites are not interested in substantive change. And that is the exact same today. And the reason we know that is because in a country, and for those of you who've listening, who have been listening, you've heard me say this many times before, for all of the white people in this country, if only a tiny fraction would be dedicated to getting rid of racism, white supremacy, it would be gone. But they're not. So that's why it's still here, flourishing. And it's not a matter of conservatives or liberals or left or right. It's about maintaining white hegemony, but doing that in the way in a way where it doesn't look too bad up front, right? It looks like we want to do the right thing, but substantively, we're not doing everything we can to eradicate racism, white supremacy. So let's get to Sean in Lakeland. You've been so patient. I know I've talked about a break, but I want to talk to y'all. I want to talk to y'all, so we'll go through a break later. All right, and again, this is WMNF 88.5 with Kaya Wright in the Fourth Estate on the Sunday Forum for those of you who may have just joined us. So let's listen to Sean in Lakeland. Sean, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for taking my call. I'm enjoying the conversation and enjoying the clips of Dr. King today. And I just have one point to make, and I'll be brief. And when I called in a while back, it was right after I heard the phrase, the states' rights mentioned. And every time I hear that, I want to say we should point out what a lie that is. You know, before the Civil War, leading up to it, in a supposed compromise, the Fugitive Slave Law was passed, which totally imposed on the laws of the states that had abolished slavery. This has nothing to do with states' rights. The cause of the Confederacy and Lee didn't at the time of the Civil War. It didn't at the time of Civil Rights Movement, and it doesn't stay. And any time someone says that, we should call it out, and that's why I'm calling in. So thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much, Sean. And if you notice, right after I said states' rights, I said, I don't want to hear that.
Sean didn't want to hear it either.
Yeah, Sean didn't want to hear it either. So, yes, Sean, you are 100% correct with regards to the fact that that's simply a red herring, right? That is simply a red herring. So another clip I wanted to play when it comes to Marlon, there are a number of them, but one thing that King is often asked, he was asked about, and white people still do this. If you remember that clip I played from Malcolm X several weeks ago about the kids at Berkeley, you remember one was asking, here's that question, right? Well, other minorities came here with nothing, the Irish and this and that, you know, and, you know, didn't they pull themselves up by their bootstraps? So, you know, what's going on with black people and why can't you, you know, get yourselves together? And, okay, so that's a question that people ask. So, and he was asked this, not only by him, but also by Mike Wallace, and I might have the Mike Wallace clip as well. But anyway, it is the same exact sentiment that, because really what underlies that question, what is the matter with you? Never mind that this is in this clip I'm about to play is 64. Okay, we're in the middle of, you know, Jim Crow, despite, you know, Brown versus Board, right? Obviously, which is why we had the Civil Rights Movement. Just 100 years out of slavery, where, and Dr. King's going to talk about this, where you know give us nothing, and you have the gall to ask this question. That tells you it's not really about the question, right? Because they were asking that in a time where just reasonably it didn't make any sense. It's not logical to ask that question at that time, right? But they were continuing to ask the question. So let's hear, and I hope I get the time right because I think this is going to have to, this one actually started over. But I want to get to that point and just you know, think. You know, just think about the fact that this is a man who is trying to do extraordinary things and is being basically disrespected, if you will, in this way. So let's listen to
that. The fact that they were citizens of this country.
Anything without depersonalizing that something. If you and they are always looking for an excuse. To go, but so far.
Why are they looking for the excuse? What is it about the Negro? I mean, every other group that came as an immigrant somehow, not easily, but somehow got around it. Is it just the fact that Negroes are black?
That's a part of it, and growing, that grows out of something else. You can't thingify anything without depersonalizing that something. If you use something as a means to an end, at that moment you make it a thing and you depersonalize it. The fact is that the Negro was a slave in this country for 244 years. That act, that was a willful thing that was done. The Negro was brought here in chains, treated in very inhuman fashion, And this led to the thingification of the Negro. So he was not looked upon as a person. He was not looked upon as a human being with the same status and worth as other human beings. And the other thing is that human beings cannot continue to do wrong without eventually rationalizing that wrong. So slavery was justified morally, biologically, theoretically, scientifically, everything else. And it seems to me that white America must see that no other ethnic group has been a slave on American soil. That is one thing that other immigrant groups haven't had to face. The other thing is that the color became a stigma. American society made the Negro's color a stigma. And that can never be overlooked. So I think these things are absolutely necessary. The other thing is that America freed the slaves in 1863 through the Emancipation Proclamation of Abraham Lincoln, but gave the slaves no land or nothing in reality, and as a matter of fact, to get started on. At the same time, America was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that there was a willingness to give the white peasants from Europe an economic base. And yet it refused to give its black peasants from Africa, who came here involuntarily in chains and had worked free for 244 years, any kind of economic base. And so emancipation for the Negro was really freedom to hunger. It was freedom to the winds and rains of heaven. It was freedom without food to eat or land to cultivate, and therefore it was freedom and famine at the same time. And when white Americans tell the Negro to lift himself by his own bootstraps, They don't look over the legacy of slavery and segregation. I believe we ought to do all we can and seek to lift ourselves by our own bootstraps. But it's a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. And many Negroes, by the thousands and millions, have been left bootless as a result of all of these years of oppression and as a result of a society that deliberately made his color a stigma and something worthless and degrading.
All right, so we are going to go to a very, very quick break and be back with MLK here on WMNF 88.5. You're listening to Kaya Wright in the Fourth Estate on the Sunday Forum. And we're going to get into some MLK talking about Black is Beautiful, okay? So looking forward to hearing some of those clips. And also his Harry Belafonte statement, okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to want to stick around for that. So, hey, we're going to go to a quick break once again, and we'll be back here on WMNF 88.5.
That's 813-239-9663.
WMNF Tampa, Chris, stay on the line for us. We'll be back to you in just a moment.
It's finally happening. WMNF presents J.D. McPherson at Skipper Smokehouse on February 22nd.
Joker Sun King in Diamonds to Dust.
Influenced by a wide spectrum of musical genres, J.D. McPherson blends 50s and 60s roots revival with a rocking alternative sound. Lindsay Beaver opens the show at 8 p.m. Her soulful drumming and vocals on her debut album have made her WMNF's most exciting 2018 roots and blues discovery.
Come on, baby, let's rock now. Come on, baby, let's roll now.
Join us for a night of soul, roots, and rock with J.D. McPherson and Lindsay Beaver, Friday, February 22nd at Skipper's Smokehouse. Tickets and more information at WMNF.org.
Welcome back to the Sunday Forum and Kaya Wright in the Fourth Estate, WMNF Tampa.
All right, all right. So our theme today, of course, in honor of Martin Luther King's observance tomorrow, I guess I should say, since his birthday was on the 15th again, is Martin Luther King unwhitewashed? And we just heard him talking about this statement that is often made about, you know, what's going on with black people, and what's wrong with black people, that they haven't been able to, quote, pull themselves up by their bootstrap. But, you know, he takes it head on. He took it head on and distinguished black people from other groups, which I don't know why people even ask that question, given how obvious the answer is. Okay, there is no other group, not one, that has our experience. Okay, not one. And who has suffered what we have suffered, of course, in the same manner. Not one. So the ways in which we are treated are a direct result of that. And the ways in which we continue to be treated is a result of the same sociopathology that brought us here and that and what we see here now today. And we see the reaction to what we have tried to do when we have made efforts to say, hey, we're, you know, we demand to be treated with the respect and dignity that we deserve as citizens of this country.
I've had people in at work say to me, well, why is it that whites invent all these things and handle all these things? And why don't you guys do that? You know, how come, you know, Latin Americans, how come blacks don't do this? How come only whites are able to do this? You know, all the scientific, the major scientific breakthroughs are done by whites. You know, cars, you know, Latinos don't build cars.
False.
Very few Latino countries build cars. Blacks or Africa doesn't build cars. You know, blacks here in this country, yeah, but as part of white operations. Mm. So why is it that doesn't happen? And I think it's a clear denial or understanding that the development of the wealthy and the most advanced technologically and otherwise countries and groups are dependent on those that they are building, you know, that they are suppressing. Mm-hmm. So it's one is based on the other. I had a professor at one of the colleges have us read this piece by somebody from Harvard that essentially did that. This was at the beginning of like a comeback, even though there's always been a comeback by racist whites. And he essentially said something similar, you know, and so I said that in class. Totally out of the question. He said that has nothing to do with it. Why do you always have to go back to history? Why don't you keep it in the today? You know, in nowadays. You know,
I mean, first of all, it's not even true. Okay, that all scientific discoveries and civilization, etc. That is a complete myth.
Yeah,
that is a complete myth. It's more delusion. Okay, that is designed to maintain the belief, which is false, that everything worth having came from white people. That's the only point, when we all know that there were vast civilizations on the continent of Africa, right, before Europeans had anything remotely close. You know, people say they were in caves, whatever. I'm not sure what the timeline is, but there wasn't anything close. Okay, so it's simply not true. I mean, forget the fact that they depend on all of our countries in the continent. I mean, you know, Africa's the richest continent on the planet. But it's simply not true. It's simply not true. It's a complete lie designed to maintain this notion of white superiority. There was just a video, I don't know if you saw that, Lo. This was about a month ago, and I forget which university it was. It was, I don't know if it was Notre Dame or whatever. But anyway, there was a white young man, you know, whatever. He's in undergrad, and he's saying that exact same thing. He's yelling on video, white people did everything, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that, but you know, so even, you know, it's always the same. It's always the same thing. But let's hear from Martin. Let's hear from unwhitewashed Martin. And this is the Martin. And I want to say, I saw a notation that this clip was from the day before he was assassinated. So, you know, let's hear from that. And Chris, I see you. We're gonna get to you. So let's hear what Martin Luther King has to say about his people, years now after going through what he has gone through. All right, we got a little bit of technical there. Hey, I want to make sure we get this because this is a really good one.
Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. Thank you.
But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
Yeah, Lo said he was sounding like Malcolm right there. Yes, he was. You know, he'd say somebody told a lie. And if anyone who's seen Malcolm X, you remember that scene where he talks about, and it's very powerful. And it shows, the psychological aspect of trying to degrade a people and juxtapose them to whites who not only, you know, just the basic denotative kind of definition, but also how they are depicted, okay, in society as a whole, vis-a-vis black people, and how those psychological images shape ideas, actions, policies, etc. So really proud of what it is that he had to say. But let's get to, we got a couple more callers on that I want to get to. So let's get to Chris in Clearwater. Chris in Clearwater, you are on the Sunday Forum with Kaya Wright in the Fourth Estate. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great. We're glad to hear so much underreported news on Dr. King after so many years. In 1964, most folks might be surprised to learn that the Deacons for Defense and Justice formed their armed bodyguards that protected civil rights activists from the KKK, like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And it was formed by black veterans from World War II. I was kind of surprised that Glenn Smiley observed during a house visit to Dr. King that even though the police didn't allow him to have a weapon, Dr. King had a weapons permit, but, quote, the place is an arsenal, end quote. That's Dr. King's home, according to Glenn Smiley. So I also wanted to point out that because government has been found to be involved in the instrumental culpable guilty of the assassinations of Dr. King and JFK and RFK, in a court of law just for by Dr. King's family.
Right.
In 1999, a unanimous court civil decision found that there were city, state, and local governments involved. We should, I think, take this holiday to call for reparations and apologies from those involved and those agencies involved. The government meets words and actions of peace with murder, and I know that they have not stopped. So as law enforcement is under no requirement to protect us, we need to continue to maintain that obligation, that necessity of self-defense ourselves.
Yeah, thanks a lot. We appreciate the call, Chris. And, you know, Lo, go ahead and talk a little bit about the weapons bit.
Yeah, so to elaborate on what Chris brought out, as far as in 1965, Martin Luther King's home was bombed. And so that's when he applied to have a permit to protect his family, protect himself and his family. And he was denied by the sheriff there in Alabama. So during that time frame, there was, I want to refer to it as a May issue, M-A-Y issue, I-S-S-U-E. So basically, that sheriff can deny, regardless of, you know, Martin Luther King being a clergyman and this happening to him. So that's why he didn't have that. He wasn't able to carry around a gun, unfortunately, and had to depend on these other folks and organizations like Chris mentioned to protect his family. So this man as an individual couldn't even arm himself and protect his family based on that. Now, let's say, you know, 2019 in Alabama, there were some amends or changes to that particular law. But, you know, in many states, not just Alabama, certain actions like this still can take place. Where there can be discretion by the sheriff not to issue someone a concealed weapons permit. So I appreciate that being brought out, but that is something that we need to be aware of, that Martin Luther King was in favor of protecting yourself with weaponry, with, you know, as a self-defense.
Definitely, definitely a visionary. And he touched briefly on the governmental programs that were started for whites when he talked a little bit in that clip when they were talking about, you know, when he's talking about pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, etc. But here's another clip where he goes into even more detail. I mean, Dr. King was fired up on this evening. But listen to what he said about how the government did for whites and not for us.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. And this is what we are faced with. And this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. He said, we are coming to get our check.
Yes. A quick correction. If I stated 1965, it was intended for 1956. That's when that happened.
Okay.
To MLK and the denial and the bombing.
Okay. And then another thing I want to touch on as we're about to wind down here and kind of get to, I'm trying to get to Sister Kelly because she's been on for a couple of minutes now. But just real quickly, think about the fact that when it comes to looking at black leaders and COINTELPRO, we spoke about before, and ways they try to pit leaders against each other. Okay, so here's a quick clip of Muhammad Ali and MLK. Okay, they had just had a meeting, and notice how, you know, the reporters are going to try to pit them against each other and get in their business. And I like how Muhammad Ali is basically like, it's none of your business, and MLK followed right up with him. Right? Followed right up with him. So let's hear what it is that they had to say.
What did you discuss back in the hotel room?
Nothing. Just friends. Just like Khrushchev and Kennedy and everybody. When the people, all of the politicians of all other white races come together, and they, although they believe different, they think different, whites can come together and discuss the common cause. But whenever a few of us come together, the world is shook up. And I say, whatever went back there is our business.
Reverend King, do you agree?
Oh, yes. We had a very good discussion on many matters. And, of course, these are not things that we would discuss here. But we do have common problems and common concerns. And above all, as Muhammad Ali has just said, we are all victims of the same system of oppression. And even though we may have different religious beliefs, this does not at all bring about a difference in terms of our concerns.
Okay, so we're running out of time. So real quickly, I want to play this bit about from Harry Belafonte about MLK, and I'm going to get to you, Sister Kelly, and you're going to have to make it really quick, but I want to get to you.
Last thing Dr. King ever said to me 5 days, as a matter of fact, before he was murdered, was he was at my home. We had just finished a strategy meeting on the Poor People's Campaign. And he seemed quite agitated after what we thought was a very successful gathering and discussion. And he said to me, I said, what's the matter, Martin? You seem very agitated. He said, well, I am. Because I've come upon a thought that I don't know how to deal with at this moment. I said, well, what is it? He says, we fought long for integration. It looks like we're going to get it. I think we get the laws. He says, but I'm afraid that I've come upon something I don't know quite what to do with. I'm afraid that we're integrating into a burning house.
All right, Kelly, Sister Kelly, real quick, I got about 20 seconds for you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Blessings.
Blessings, ma'am.
Okay, remembrance. I would love a topic to parallel racism and religion, like Southern Baptist religion that comes to my little island way back in the 40s. and robbed us of our identity, language, culture.
Wow.
Made a road for Colombia to step in and colonialize the San Andres Islands, South America, 30 minutes out of Panama. And as of today, we are an occupied people, have no identity because of religion.
Okay, ma'am. I'm sorry. We're going to have to go. But listen, great to hear from you. Thank you very much. But that is something we will touch on, okay? Thank you, ma'am. All right, that's it. And we're turning it over here on WMNF. Bye-bye.